Questions. Kath did her best. She didn't know what Ren had been drinking. She didn't know where she'd been or whom she was with. All the other questions felt like things Kath shouldn't answer in front of a stranger, in front of Laura, who was just standing there, watching Kath's face like she was taking notes. Kath looked at her, helplessly, defensively, and Laura walked back to the corner. Was Ren a regular drinker? Yes. Did she often drink to drunkenness? Yes. Did she black out? Yes. Did she use any other drugs? I don't know. Was she on any medication? Birth control. Do you have an insurance card? Yes. Can I see her? Kath asked. Not yet, the nurse answered. Is she okay? I'm not her nurse, but the doctor just briefed your mom. Kath looked back at Laura, at her mom, at this upset blonde woman with tired eyes and really expensive jeans. Kath went to sit across from her, studying herself. This wasn't a reunion. This wasn't anything. Kath was here for Ren. Is she okay? Her mom looked up. I think so. She hasn't woken up yet. Someone dropped her off at the emergency room a few hours ago, then left. I guess she wasn't breathing enough. I don't really know how it works. They're giving her fluids. It's just time now, waiting. Laura's hair was cut into a long bob that hung like two sharp wings under her chin. She was wearing a stiff white shirt and too many rings on her fingers. Why did they call you? Kath asked. Maybe it was a rude thing to ask. She didn't care. Oh, Laura said. She reached into a cream-colored coach bag and pulled out Ren's phone, holding it across the aisle. Kath took it. They looked in her contacts, Laura said. They said they always call the mom first. The mom, Kath thought. Kath dialed her dad's number. It went straight to voicemail. She stood up and walked a few chairs away, for 2 feet of privacy. Dad, it's Kath. I'm at the hospital. I haven't seen Ren yet. I'll call you when I know more. I talked to him earlier, Laura said. He's in Tulsa. I know, Kath said, looking down at the phone. Why didn't he call me? I said I would. He had to call the airline. Kath sat back down, not right across from Laura anymore. She didn't have anything more to say to her, and there was nothing she wanted to hear. Laura cleared her throat. She was starting every sentence like she didn't have the breath to finish it. You still look so much alike. Kath jerked her head up to look at her. It was like looking at nobody at all. And then it was like looking at the person you expected to see comforting you when you woke up from a nightmare. Whenever Levi had asked about her mother, Kath always said she didn't remember much, and that had always been true. But now it wasn't. Now, just sitting this close to Laura unlocked some secret, half-sized door in Kath's brain, and she could see her mom in perfect focus, sitting on the other side of their dining room table. She was laughing at something that Ren had said, so Ren kept saying it, and their mom kept laughing. She laughed through her nose. Her hair was dark, and she tucked Sharpies into her ponytail, and she could draw anything, a flower, a seahorse, a unicorn. And when she was irritated, she snapped at them, snapped her fingers, snap, 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 while she was talking on the phone. Stern eyebrows, bared teeth, shh. She was in the bedroom with their dad, shouting. She was at the zoo, helping Ren chase a peacock. She was rolling out dough for gingerbread cookies. She was on the phone, snapping. She was in the bedroom, yelling. She was standing on the porch, pushing Kath's hair behind her ears again and again, stroking her cheek with a long, flat thumb and making promises she wasn't going to keep. "We're twins," Kath said. because it was the stupidest thing she could think to say, because that's what "you still look so much alike" deserved when your mom was the one saying it. Kath took out her phone and texted Levi. At the hospital now. Still haven't seen Ren. Alcohol poisoning. My mom's here. I'll call you tomorrow. And then she texted. I'm glad that you're out there somewhere reading this, eventually reading this. It makes me feel better. Her battery indicator turned red. Laura got out her phone, too. Why was Kath calling her that? When she was a kid, Kath hadn't even known their mom's name. Their dad called her Honey. Strained and tense and careful. Honey. And their mom called him Art. Laura was texting someone, probably her husband, and for some reason it pissed Kath off that she was texting someone right now, that she was flaunting her new life. Kath folded her arms and watched the nurse's station. When she felt the tears coming on, she told herself that they were for Ren, and surely some of them were. They waited and waited, but not together. Laura got up to use the bathroom once. She walked like Ren, hips swaying, flicking her hair away from her face. "Would you like some coffee?" she asked. "No, thank you," Kath said. While Laura was gone, Kath tried to call her dad again. If he answered the phone, she was pretty sure she'd cry some more. She might even call him Daddy. He didn't answer. Laura brought back a bottle of water and set it on the table next to Kath. Kath didn't open it. The nurses ignored them. Laura flipped through a magazine. When a doctor walked out to the waiting room, they both stood up.
"Mrs. Avery?" he said, looking at Kath's mother.
"How is she?" Laura said, which Kath thought was a deft response.
"I think she's going to be fine," the doctor said. "Her breathing is good, her oxygen is good, she's sucking up those fluids, and she roused a bit to talk to me a few minutes ago. I think this is just going to be a scare. Sometimes a scare can be valuable."
"Can I see her?" Kath asked. The doctor looked over at Kath. She could almost hear him think, "Twins."
"Yeah," he said, "that should be fine. We're just running another test. I'll have the nurse come out for you when we're done."
Kath nodded and folded her arms again around her stomach. "Thank you," Laura said. Kath went back to her chair to wait, but Laura stood there by the nurse's station. After a minute, she walked back to her chair and picked up her coach bag, tucking a used Kleenex into a pocket and nervously smoothing out the leather straps. "Well," she said, "I think I'm going to head home."
"What?"
Kath's head snapped up. "I should go," Laura said. "Your dad will be here soon."
"But you can't."
Laura slid her handbag up over her arm.
"You heard the doctor," Kath said. "We're going to be able to see her in a few minutes."
"You go see her," Laura said. "You should go."
"You should come too."
"Is that what you really want?"
Laura's voice was sharp, and part of Kath shrank back.
"It's what Ren would want."
"Don't be so sure," Laura said, sounding tired again, pinching the bridge of her nose. "Look, I shouldn't be here. It was a fluke that they called me. You're here now. Your dad's on his way."
"You don't just leave somebody alone in the hospital," Kath said.
It came out a flame. "Ren's not alone," Laura said sternly. "She has you." Kath jerked to her feet and swayed there.
"Not Ren," she thought. "I didn't mean Ren."
Laura wrenched her handbag straps higher.
"Cather, you can't leave like this."
"It's the right thing to do," Laura said, lowering her voice.
"In what alternate universe?"
Kath felt the rage burst up her throat like a cork popping.
"What sort of mother leaves the hospital without seeing her kid? What sort of mother leaves? Ren is unconscious, and if you think that has nothing to do with you, you are skimming the surface of reality. And I'm right here, And you haven't even seen me for 10 years, and now you're leaving? Now?
Don't make this about me, Laura hissed. You obviously don't want me here.
I'm making it about me, Kath said. It's not my job to want you or not want you. It's not my job to earn you.
Cather. Laura's mouth and fists were tight. I've reached out to you. I've tried.
You're my mother, Kath said.
Her fists were even tighter.
Try harder.
This isn't the time or the place for this, Laura said softly, steadily, tugging on her handbag. I'll talk to Ren later. I'd love to talk to you later, too. I'd love to talk to you, Cather. But I don't belong here right now. Kath shook her head.
Now is all you get, she spat out, wishing she could make more sense, wishing for more words or better ones. Now is all you ever get.
Laura lifted her chin and flicked her hair away from her face. She wasn't listening anymore. She was the cool one. I don't belong here, she said again. I won't intrude like this. And then she walked away, shoulders back, hips swaying.
You'd have to tell the mage what he saw. I've finally seen the humdrum, sir. I know what we're fighting. Me.
What's left of you?
The monster had said.
What is left of me?
Simon wondered.
A ghost? A hole? An echo? An angry little boy with nervous hands?
From Chapter 24, Simon Snow and the Seventh Oak, copyright 2010, by Gemma T. Leslie.
Chapter 29. It was another hour before the nurse came back. Kath drank her bottled water. She wiped her face and her shirt. She thought about how much nicer this waiting room was than the one at St. Richard's. She tried to mess with her phone, but it was dead. When the nurse came out, Kath stood up.
Are you here for Ren Avery?
Kath nodded.
You can come back now. Do you want to wait for your mom?
Kath shook her head. Ren was in a room by herself. It was dark, and her eyes were closed. Kath couldn't tell if she was sleeping. Do I need to watch for anything? Kath asked the nurse. No, she's just resting now. Our dad will be here soon, Kath said. Okay, we'll send him back. Kath sat down slowly, quietly, in the chair by Ren's bed. Ren looked pale. She had a dark spot, maybe a bruise on her cheek. Her hair was longer than it had been at Christmas, hanging over her eyes and curling at her neck. Kath pushed it back. I'm awake, you know, Ren whispered. Are you still drunk? A little. Muzzy. Kath tucked Ren's hair back in a soothing gesture, soothing for Kath anyway. What happened? Don't remember. Who brought you in? Ren shrugged. There was an IV in her arm and something taped to her index finger. Up close, she smelled like puke and like Ren, like Tide and Marc Jacobs' Lola. Are you okay? Muzzy, she said. Sick. Dad's coming. Ren groaned. Kath folded her arms on the edge of the mattress and laid her head down, exhaling. I'm glad they brought you in, she said. Whoever it was who brought you in, I'm sorry that I wasn't there, that you didn't want me there, that I wouldn't have known how to stop you anyway. Now that she was with Ren, and Ren was okay, Kath realized how exhausted she was. She shoved her glasses into her coat pocket and laid her head back down. She was just drifting off, or maybe she'd just drifted off, when she heard Ren whimper. Kath lifted her head. Ren was crying.
Her eyes were closed, and tears were running down into her hair. Kath could almost feel the tickle. "What's wrong?" Ren shook her head. Kath wiped Ren's tears away with her fingers and wiped her fingers on her shirt. "Should I get the nurse?" Ren shook her head again and started shifting in the bed. "Here," she said, making room. "Are you sure?" Kath asked. "I don't want to be the reason you choke on your own vomit." "None left," Ren whispered. Kath kicked off her boots and climbed up over the railing, lying down in the space Ren had cleared for her. She put her arm carefully under Ren's neck. "Here," Kath said. Ren curled against her with her head on Kath's shoulder. Kath tried to untangle the tubes around Ren's arm, then held her hand tightly. It was sticky. Ren's shoulders were still shaking. "It's okay," Kath said. "It's okay." Kath tried not to fall asleep until Ren did, but it was dark and she was tired, and everything was blurry. "Oh, God," she heard their dad say. "Oh, Ren, baby." Kath opened her eyes, and her dad was leaning over them both, kissing both of their foreheads. Kath sat up carefully. Ren's eyes were crusty and puffy, but open. Their dad stood back and put his hand on Ren's cheek. "Jesus Christ," he said, shaking his head. "Kid." He was wearing gray dress pants and a light blue shirt, untucked. His tie, orange with white starbursts, was stuffed into and hanging out of his pocket. Presentation clothes, Kath thought. She checked his eyes out of habit. They were tired and shining, but clear. Kath felt overwhelmed then, all of a sudden, and even though this wasn't her show, she leaned forward and hugged him, pressing her face into his stale shirt until she could hear his heart beating. His arm came up warm around her. "Okay," he said roughly. Kath felt Ren take her hand. "Okay," their dad said again. "We're okay now." Ren didn't have to stay in the hospital. "You can sleep and drink water at home," the doctor said. "Real home, Omaha." "You're coming back with me," their dad said, and Ren didn't argue.
"I'm coming too," Kath said, and he nodded. A nurse took out Ren's IV, and Kath helped her to the bathroom, patting her back while she dry-heaved over the sink. Then Kath helped her wash her face and change into her clothes, jeans and a tank top.
"Where's your coat?" their dad asked.
Ren just shrugged. Kath took off her cardigan and handed it to her. "It smells like sweat," Ren said.
"It'll be the best-smelling part of you," Kath answered. Then they had to wait for Ren's paperwork. The nurse asked if she'd like to speak to an addiction specialist. Ren said no. Their dad just frowned.
"Have you eaten anything?" Kath asked him.
He yawned. "We'll drive through someplace."
"I'm driving," Kath said.
Their dad had tried to get a flight out of Tulsa the night before, but there weren't any until this afternoon, so he'd ended up renting a car.
"Kelly gave me the agency visa,"
and driving for 7 hours. The nurse came back with discharge papers and told Ren that she'd have to leave the hospital in a wheelchair.
"It's policy."
Ren complained, but their dad just stood behind the wheelchair and said,
"Do you want to argue or do you want to go home?"
When the nurse buzzed them out into the waiting room, Kath felt her stomach jump and realized that she was half expecting to see Laura still sitting out there. Fat chance, Kath thought. The doors opened and Ren made a sobby little gasping noise. For a second, Kath thought maybe Laura was still there, or maybe Ren was trying to throw up again. There was a guy sitting in the waiting room with his head in his hands. He heard Ren's gasp and looked up, then stood up, and Ren was out of the wheelchair, shuffling toward him. He took her in his arms and pushed his face down into her pukey hair. It was the big guy from Muggsy's. The guy who threw punches. Kath couldn't remember his name. Javier? Julio?
"Who's that?" her dad asked.
"Jandro," Kath said.
Ah, he said, watching them hug. Hondro.
Yeah.
Kath hoped that it wasn't Hondro who dropped Ren off at the emergency room, then left her alone. She hoped that he didn't know anything about that bruise on her cheek. Hey, someone said, and Kath stepped aside, realizing she was standing in the middle of the hallway. Hey, he said again. She looked up and into Levi's smiling face. Hey, she said, and it almost came out with an exclamation point. What are you doing here?
I got your text. I texted you back.
My phone's dead. Kath looked up at Levi's crinkle-cut eyes and relieved smile, trying to take him all in. He was holding two cups of coffee and had a banana shoved into the pocket of his flannel shirt.
Mr. Avery, he said, holding out a cup of coffee. This was for Hondro, but it looks like he's covered.
Her dad took the coffee.
Thanks, Levi.
Levi, Kath repeated, and she knew she was close to crying. You didn't have to come. He made a loose fist and chucked her gently on the bottom of her chin, taking a half step toward her.
Yeah, I did.
Kath tried not to smile, but ended up smiling so wide her ears almost popped.
They wouldn't let me back, he said. Or Hondro. Only immediate family.
Kath nodded.
Is your sister okay?
Yeah, hungover, embarrassed. We're going back to Omaha now, all three of us.
Are you okay?
Yeah. Yeah. She reached for his hand and squeezed it. Thank you, she said.
You didn't even know I was here.
I know now, and I'll apply these feelings backwards. Thank you. Did you miss your sister's birthday party?
No, it's tomorrow after church. I'll take a nap and head back that way, unless you need anything.
Nope.
Are you hungry?
Kath laughed. Are you about to offer me a banana?
I'm about to offer you half a banana,
Levi said, letting go of her hand. He gave her the coffee and took the banana out of his pocket, peeling it. Kath glanced over at Ren. She was introducing their dad to Hondro. Ren looked like hell, but Hondro was looking at her like she was the Lady of the Lake. Levi handed Kath half a banana, and she took it.
Cheers, he said, tapping his hand against hers.
Kath ate the banana and held on to his gaze. I'd give you the moon right now, she said. Levi's eyes flashed happily, and he hitched up an eyebrow.
Yeah, but would you slay it for me?
Kath drove home. They drove through McDonald's first, and her dad ordered two filet-o-fish sandwiches and said that neither of them could nag him about it. Ren grimaced. I don't even care if it's bad for your cholesterol. It's the smell that's making me sick.
Maybe you shouldn't have drunk yourself into a bilious stupor, their dad said.
And that's when Kath realized that he wasn't going to pretend that nothing was wrong, that he wasn't just going to let Ren go about her business. Kath smashed her cheeseburger against the steering wheel and was the only person on the interstate observing the speed limit. When they got home, Ren went straight in to take a shower. Her dad stood in the living room, looking lost. You go next, Kath told him. I'm not that gross.
We have to talk about all this, he said. Tonight. I mean, not you. You don't. Ren and I have to talk. I should have talked to her at Christmas, but there was so much else going on.
I'm sorry.
Don't, Kath.
It's my fault, too. I hid it from you. He took off his glasses and rubbed his forehead.
Not that well. I saw what she was doing. I thought she'd, I don't know, self-correct, that she'd get it out of her system.
His necktie had worked its way almost completely out of his pocket. You should sleep, Kath said. Take a shower, then sleep. Ren walked out of the bathroom wearing their dad's robe and smiled feebly at them. Kath patted her dad's arm, then followed Ren upstairs. When Kath got up to their room, Ren was standing at her dresser, impatiently rifling through a mostly empty drawer. We don't have any pajamas. Calm down, Junie B. Jones, Kath said, walking over to her own dresser.
Here. She handed Ren a t-shirt and a pair of shorts left over from high school gym. Ren changed and climbed into her bed. Kath crawled on top of the comforter beside her.
You smell like puke, Ren said. Yours, Kath said. How are you feeling?
Tired. Ren closed her eyes. Kath tapped softly on Ren's forehead.
Was that your boyfriend?
Yes, Ren whispered. Alejandro.
Alejandro,
Kath said, breathing the J and rolling the R. Have you been dating since last semester?
Yes.
Were you out with him last night? Ren shook her head. Tears were starting to pool between her eyelashes.
Who'd you go out with?
Courtney.
How'd you bruise your face?
I don't remember.
But it wasn't Alejandro.
Ren's eyes flew open.
God, Kath, no.
She squeezed her eyes shut again and flinched. He's probably going to break up with me. He hates it when I get drunk. He says it's unbecoming.
He didn't look like he was going to break up with you this morning.
Ren took a deep, shuddering breath.
I can't think about it right now.
Don't, Kath said.
Sleep.
Ren slept. Kath went downstairs. Her dad was already asleep. He'd skipped the shower. Kath felt inexplicably peaceful. The last thing Levi had said to her when they'd parted in the hospital lobby was, "Plug in your phone." So Kath did. Then she started some laundry.
"We can't be friends," Baz said, passing Simon the ball.
"Why not?"
Simon asked, kicking the ball up and bouncing it on his knee.
"Because we're already enemies." "It's not like we have to stay that way. There isn't a rule."
"There is a rule," Baz said. "I made it myself. Don't be friends with Snow. He already has too many."
He shouldered Simon out of the way and caught the ball on his own knee.
"You're infuriating,"
Simon said.
"Good. I'm fulfilling my role as your nemesis."
"You're not my nemesis. The humdrum is."
"Hmm,"
Baz said, letting the ball drop and kicking it back to Simon.
"We'll see. The story's not over yet."
From Baz, "You Like It." Posted September 2008. By fanfics.net authors Magicath and Renegade.
Chapter 30. "We don't need to talk about this," Ren said.
"You were just hospitalized for alcohol poisoning," their dad said. "We're talking about it."
Kath set a stack of foil-wrapped burritos on the table between them, then sat down at the head of the table.
"There's nothing to say," Ren insisted. She still looked terrible. There were circles under her eyes, and her skin was waxy and yellow.
"You're just going to say that I shouldn't drink that much, and then I'm going to say that you're right."
"No," their dad interrupted. "I'm going to say that you shouldn't drink at all."
"Well, that's not very realistic." He smacked his fist on the table.
"Why the hell not?"
Ren sat back in her chair and took a second to recover. He'd never cursed at either of them.
"Everybody drinks," she said calmly.
"The only rational one."
"Your sister doesn't."
Ren rolled her eyes. "Forgive me, but I'm not going to spend my college years sitting soberly in my dorm room writing about gay magicians."
"Objection," Kath said, reaching for a burrito.
"Sustained," their dad said.
"Your sister has a 4.0, Ren, and a very polite boyfriend. She's doing just fine with her college years."
Ren's head whipped around. "You have a boyfriend?
You haven't met Levi?"
Their dad sounded surprised and sad.
"Are you guys even talking?"
"You stole your roommate's boyfriend?" Ren's eyes were big.
"It's a long story," Kath said.
Ren kept staring at her.
"Have you kissed him?"
"Ren," their dad said, "I'm serious about this."
"What do you want me to say? I drank too much."
"You're out of control," he said.
"I'm fine. I'm just 18.
"Exactly," he
he said. You're coming back home.
Kath almost spit out her carnitas.
I am not, Ren said.
You are.
You can't make me, she said, managing to sound at least 12.
I can, actually.
He was tapping his fingers so hard on the table it looked painful.
I'm your father. I'm pulling rank. I should have done this a long time ago, but better late than never, I guess. I'm your father.
Dad, Kath whispered.
No, he said, staring at Ren. I am not letting this happen to you. I'm not taking a call like that again. I'm not spending every weekend from now on wondering where you are and who you're with and whether you're even sober enough to know when you've landed in the gutter.
Kath had seen her dad this mad before, heard him rant, watched him wave his arms around, cursing, steam pouring out of his ears, but it was never about them. It was never at them.
This was a warning, he said, stabbing his finger at Ren, nearly shouting. This was your canary in the goddamn coal mine, and you're trying to ignore it. What kind of father would I be if I sent you back to that school knowing you hadn't learned your lesson?
I'm 18, Ren shouted. Kath thought this was probably a bad strategy.
I don't care, he shouted back. You're still my daughter.
It's the middle of the semester. I'll fail all my classes.
You weren't worried about school or your future when you were poisoning yourself with tequila.
She cocked her head. How did you know I was drinking tequila?
Christ, Ren. He sighed bitterly. You smelled like a margarita blender.
You kinda still do, Kath muttered. Ren planted her elbows on the table and hid her face in her hands. Everybody drinks, she said stubbornly. Their dad pushed his chair back.
If that's all you have to say for yourself, then all I have to say is, you're coming home.
He got up and went into his room, slamming the door. Ren let her head and her hands fall to the table. Kath scooted her chair closer. Do you want some aspirin? Ren was quiet for a few seconds. Why aren't you mad at me? Why should I be mad at you? Kath asked. You've been mad at me since November. Since July. Well, I'm done now. Does your head hurt? You're done? Ren turned her head toward Kath, her cheek lying on the table. You scared me last night, Kath said, and I decided that I never want to drift that far away from you again. What if you died? And I hadn't talked to you for 3 months. I wasn't going to die. Ren rolled her eyes again. Dad's right, Kath said. You sound like a moron. Ren looked down, rubbing her face and her wrist. I'm not going to stop drinking. Why not? Kath wanted to ask. Instead, she said, just pause then, for the rest of the year. Just to show him that you can. I can't believe you have a boyfriend, Ren whispered, and I didn't even know about it. Her shoulders started to shake. She was crying again. Kath had never seen Ren cry this much. Hey, Kath said, it's okay. I wasn't going to die, Ren said. Okay. I've really missed you. Are you still drunk? Kath asked. I don't think so. Kath leaned over on the edge of her chair and tugged at Ren's hair. It's okay. I miss you too. Not all this drunk stuff, but you. I've been a jerk to you, Ren whispered into the table. I was a jerk back. That's true, Ren said. Will you forgive me?
No, Kath said.
Ren looked up pathetically. I don't have to forgive you, Kath said. It's not like that with you. You're just in with me, always, no matter what happens. Ren lifted her head and wiped her eyes with the back of her thumbs. Yeah? Kath nodded her head. Yeah. Their dad went for a run.
Ren ate a burrito and went back to bed. Kath finally read all her texts from Levi.
Turning round right now. Be there by 3. Cather, I really care about you. Seemed like maybe a good time to tell you that. Hour away now. In the waiting room. Not family. Can't come back. Hondro's here too. Here, okay? If you need me. Back in Arnold. Gorgeous day. Did you know Arnold has less canyons and sandhills? The biological diversity would make you weep, Cather Avery. Call me, sweetheart. And by that I mean that you should call me, not that you should call me sweetheart, though you can if you want. Call me, call me, call me.
Cath did. Levi was having dinner with his family.
You okay? He asked.
Yeah, she said. It's just tense. My dad's mad at Ren, but he doesn't really know how to be mad at either of us. And Ren is acting like a huge brat. I don't think she knows how to be wrong.
I wish I could talk more, Levi said, but my mom's weird about phone calls during family time. I'll call you tomorrow from the road, okay?
Only if the road is straight and flat and there's no other traffic.
Will you be back tomorrow? He asked.
I don't know.
I miss you.
That's stupid, she said. I saw you this morning.
It's not the time, Levi said, and she could hear that he was smiling. It's the distance.
A few minutes later, he texted her,
Idea. If you're bored and you miss me, you should write some dirty fan fiction about us. You can read it to me later. Great idea, right?
Kath smiled down at the phone stupidly. She tried to imagine what it would be like to move back home now, to leave Levi behind. She couldn't even think about what it was going to be like this summer without him. Their dad wouldn't really do this, make Ren drop out of school. That would be crazy. But their dad was crazy. And maybe he was right. Ren was out of control. She was the worst kind of out of control, the kind that thinks it's just fine, thanks. Kath liked the idea of Ren here. Ren and her dad all in one place where Kath could take care of them. If only Kath could break off a piece of herself and leave it here to keep watch. The front door opened and her dad huffed in from his run, still breathing hard, dropping his keys and his phone on the table. Hey, he said to Kath, taking off his glasses to wipe his face, then putting them back on.
Hey, she said. I put your burrito in the oven.
He nodded and walked past her into the kitchen. Kath followed.
Are you coming to plead her case?
He asked.
No.
She could have died, Kath.
I know. And I think it's been bad for a long time. I think she's just been lucky.
As far as we know, her dad said.
I just... dropping out of school?
Do you have a better idea?
Kath shook her head. Maybe she should talk to a counselor or something. Her dad made a face like Kath had thrown something wet at him.
God, Kath, how would you feel if somebody forced you to talk to a counselor?
Somebody has, she thought. I'd hate it, she said.
Yeah.
He had the burrito out of the oven and onto a plate, and he was pouring himself a glass of milk. He looked tired still and completely miserable. I love you, she said. He looked up, holding the carton of milk over the glass. Some of the strain disappeared from his forehead.
I love you too,
he said, like it was a question.
It just seemed like a good time to tell you, she said.
Her dad nodded, his eyes full of some dense feeling.
Can I borrow your laptop? She asked.
Yeah, of course. It's in...
I know. Thanks.
Kath went to the living room and picked up her dad's silver laptop. She'd lusted over this thing, but he always said she didn't need an $1,800 word processor. When Kath got upstairs, Ren was on the phone, crying. She got up off her bed and walked into the closet, sitting on the floor and closing the door behind her. This wasn't strange behavior, except for the crying. It's what they always did when they needed privacy. They had a big closet. Kath opened her fanfics account and paged idly through the comments. There were too many to respond to individually, so she posted a general, "Hey, everybody, thanks. Too busy writing to write back." then opened up the draft of her most recent chapter. She'd left off with Baz kneeling at his mother's gravestone. He was trying to explain to her why he was turning against his father, why he was turning his back on the House of Pitch to fight by Simon's side. "It's not just for him," Baz said, running his long fingers over his mother's name. "It's for Watford. It's for the world of mages." After a while, Wren came out of the closet and crawled onto Kath's bed. Kath scooted over and kept typing. After another while, Wren got under the covers and fell asleep. And after that, a while later, their dad peeked up over the top of the stairs. He looked at Kath and mouthed, "Good night." Kath nodded. She wrote 1,000 words. She wrote 500 more. The room was dark, and Kath wasn't sure how long Wren had been awake or how long she'd been reading over Kath's elbow. "Is the mage really going to betray Simon, or is it a red herring?" Wren was whispering, even though there was nobody to wake up. "I think he really is," Kath said. "That chapter where he had Simon burn the dragon eggs made me cry for 3 days. Kath stopped typing. "You read that?" "Of course I did. Have you seen your hits lately? They're through the roof. Nobody's bailing on Carry On now." "I thought you had," Kath said, "a long time ago." "Well, you were wrong." Wren propped her head up on her hand. "Add that to the towering stack of important things you're wrong about." "I think the mage is going to kill Baz." Kath hadn't told anyone else that yet, not even her beta. Wren sat up, her face actually aghast. "Kath," she whispered, "no." "Did Alejandro break up with you?" Wren shook her head. "No, he's just upset." "Kath, you can't kill Baz." Kath couldn't think of what to say. Wren took the laptop and slid it mostly into her own lap. "Jesus Christ, consider this an intervention." When Kath woke up the next morning, Sunday, she was alone in the bedroom. She could smell coffee and food. She went downstairs and found her dad sitting at the table with a notebook. She handed him his laptop. "Ah, good," he said. "Wren said we had to wait for you."
"For what?"
"For my verdict. I'm about to go all King Solomon on your asses."
"Who's King Solomon?"
"It was your mother who wanted to raise you without religion."
"She also thought you should raise us without a mother."
"Solid point, my dear." "Wren, come on. Your sister's awake."
Wren walked into the dining room holding a saucepan and a trivet. "You were asleep," she said, setting it on the table, "so I made breakfast."
"Oh, Christ," their dad said. "Is that gravioli?"
"No," Wren said. "It's new cheese gravioli."
"Sit down," he said. "We're talking."
He was in running clothes again. He looked tense and nervous. Wren sat down. She was acting playful, but she was nervous too. Kath could tell by the way she was squeezing her fists. Kath wanted to reach out and unclench them.
"Okay," their dad said, pushing the gravioli away so that it wasn't right between them on the table. "Here are my terms. You can go back to school."
Wren and Kath both exhaled.
"But you don't drink. At all. Not in moderation, not with your boyfriend, not at parties. Never. You see a counselor every week, starting this week, and you start attending AA meetings."
"Dad," Wren said, "I'm not an alcoholic."
"Good. It's not contagious. You're going to meetings."
"I'll go with you," Kath offered.
"I'm not done," their dad said.
"What more do you want?" Wren whined. "Blood tests?"
"You come home every weekend."
"Dad!"
"Or you can just move home. It's your choice, really."
"I have a life," Wren said, "in Lincoln."
"Don't talk to me about your life, kid. You've shown complete disregard for your life."
Wren's hands were tight fists, lumps of coal in her lap. Kath kicked her ankle. Wren's head dropped. "Fine," she said. "Fine."
Good, their dad said, then took a deep breath and held on to it for a second. I'll drive you back later, if you think you're ready. He stood up and looked at the gravioli. I'm not eating that. Kath pulled the pan closer and picked up a spoon. I'll eat it. She took a bite. The noodly parts dissolved immediately in her mouth. I like how soft it is, she said. I like how I don't have to use my teeth. Ren watched Kath for a few seconds, then took the spoon and scooped up a bite. It tastes like regular gravioli. Kath took it back. But cheesier. It's three comfort foods in one, Ren said. They're like pizza pillows. They're like wet Cheetos. That's terrible, Kath said. We can't use that.
I'm starting to feel like you don't want me around.
I've never wanted you around,
Simon said, trying to push past his roommate. Point. Baz moved to block the door. That was true. Until you decided that you always wanted me around. That life is just a hollow shell of itself. Unless you know my heart is beating somewhere, in the very local vicinity. Have I decided that? Maybe it was me who decided. Never mind. Same difference. Simon took a deep, obviously unnerved breath. Snow, are you unnerved?
Slightly.
Alistair Almighty, I never thought I'd see the day. From Carry On Simon. Posted February 2012 by fanfics.net author Magicath.
Chapter 31. Alejandro was waiting for them when they got to Schramm Hall. He shook hands with Kath formally. Frat boy manners, Ren said. They all have them. Hondro was in a fraternity on East Campus, she said, called Farmhouse. That's actually its name. Most of the farmhouse guys were ag majors from outstate Nebraska. Hondro was from Scott's Bluff, which was practically Wyoming. I didn't even know there were Mexicans out there, Ren said, but he claims there's this huge community. Hondro didn't say much besides, It's nice to finally meet you, Kath. Ren talks about you all the time. When you post your Simon Snow stories, I'm not allowed to talk to her until she's finished. He looked like most of Ren's boyfriends, short hair, clean cut, built to play football. But Kath couldn't remember Ren looking at any of them the way she looked at Alejandro, like she'd been converted. It was 10 o'clock by the time Levi got back from Arnold. Kath had already showered and put on pajamas. She felt like the weekend had been 2 years long, not 2 days. Freshman days. She could hear Levi say. He called to tell her he was back. Knowing they were in the same city again made the missing him flare up inside her, in her stomach. Why were people always going on and on about the heart? Almost everything Levi happened in Kath's stomach. Can I stop by? He asked. Like he wanted it. Say goodnight. Reagan's here, Kath said. She's in the shower. I think she's going to bed. Can you come down? Where would we go? Kath asked. We could sit in my truck.
It's freezing out.
We could run the heater.
The heater doesn't work. He hesitated.
We could go to my house.
Aren't your roommates home?
It was like she had a list of arguments and she was going through them one by one and she wasn't even sure why anymore. It doesn't matter, Levi pushed. I have my own room. Plus, they want to meet you.
I think I met most of them at the party.
Levi groaned. How many ground rules did Reagan give us?
I don't know, 5 maybe? 6?
Okay, here's 7. No more talking about that godforsaken party unless it's absolutely relevant.
Kath smiled. But what will I have left to needle you with?
I'm sure you'll come up with something.
I won't, she said. You're incessantly good to me.
Come home with me, Kath. She could hear him smiling. It's early, and I don't want to say goodnight.
I never want to say goodnight, but we still manage,
Wait, you don't?
No, she whispered.
Come home with me,
he whispered back. To your den of iniquity?
Yes, that's what everyone calls my room.
Gah, Kath said. I've told you, it's just too much. Your house, your room. We'll walk in, and all that will be in there is a bed, and I'll throw up from nerves.
And desire?
Mostly nerves, she said.
Why is this such a big deal? All your room has in it is a bed.
Two beds, she said, and two desks, and the constant threat of my roommate walking in.
Which is why we should go to my house. Nobody will ever walk in on us.
That's what makes me nervous. Levi hummed, like he was thinking.
What if I promise not to touch you?
Kath laughed. Now I have zero incentive to come.
What if I promise to let you touch me first?
Are you kidding? I'm the untrustworthy person in this relationship. I'm all hands.
I've seen no evidence of that, Cather.
In my head, I'm all hands.
I want to live in your head.
Kath covered her face with her hand, as if he could see her. They didn't usually flirt quite like this, quite so frankly. Maybe the phone brought it out in her. Maybe it was this weekend. Everything this weekend. Hey, Kath. Levi's voice was so soft. What exactly are we waiting for? What do you mean?
Did you take an abstinence pledge?
She laughed, but still managed to sound affronted. No?
Is it?
He exhaled quickly, like he was forcing something out.
Is it still about trust? Me earning your trust?
Kath's voice dropped to almost nothing. God, Levi, no. I trust you.
I'm not even talking about sex, he said. I mean, not just sex. We can take that off the table completely if it will make you feel better.
Completely?
Until further discussion. If you knew that I wasn't pushing for that, if that wasn't even on the horizon, do you think you could relax and just let me touch you?
What kind of touching? She asked.
Do you want me to show you on a doll? Kath laughed. Touching, he said. I want to touch you, hold you. I want to sit right next to you, even when there are other options.
She took a deep breath. She felt like she owed it to him to keep talking, to at least reciprocate this conversation. I want to touch you, too.
Yeah?
Yeah, she said.
What kind of touching?
He asked. Did you already give the operator your credit card number? Levi laughed.
Come home with me, Kath. I miss you, and I don't want to say goodnight.
The door swung open, and Reagan came back into the room wearing a t-shirt and yoga pants, a towel wrapped around her hair. Yeah, okay, Kath said. When will you get here?
He was obviously grinning. I'm already downstairs.
Kath put on brown cable-knit leggings and a plaid shirt dress that she'd taken from Ren's dorm room, plus knit wristlet thingies that made her think of gauntlets, like she was some sort of knight in pink crocheted armor. Levi's teasing her about her sweater predilection had just made it more extreme.
Going out? Reagan asked.
Levi just got back.
Should I wait up for you? She leered.
Yes, Kath said. You should. It will give you time to think about what a shameless ground rule breaker you are. Kath felt silly waiting for the elevator. Girls were walking by in their pajamas, and Kath was dressed to go out. When she stepped out into the lobby, Levi was there, leaning against a column and talking to somebody, some girl he must know from somewhere. When he saw Kath, his smile widened, and he pushed off the column with his shoulder, immediately waving goodbye to the girl.
Hey, he said, kissing the top of Kath's head. Your hair's wet.
That's what happens when you wash it. He pulled up her hood. She took his hand before he could reach for hers, and he rewarded her with an especially toothy grin. When they walked out of the building, she knew in her heart, in her stomach, that she wasn't coming back until morning. At first, Kath thought there was another party going on at Levi's house. There was music playing, and there were people in almost every room, but they were all just his roommates, and his roommates' friends and girlfriends, and in one case, maybe boyfriend. Levi introduced her to them all. "This is Cather. This is my girlfriend, Cather. Everyone, Cather." She smiled tensely and knew that she wouldn't remember any of their names. Then Levi led her up a staircase that couldn't have been original to the house. The landings were strange and cramped, and the hallways shot out at irregular intervals. Levi pointed out everyone's rooms. He pointed out the bathrooms. Kath counted 3 floors, and Levi kept climbing. When the staircase got so narrow they couldn't walk side by side anymore, he led the way. The stairs turned one more time and ended at a single doorway. Levi stopped there and turned awkwardly, holding on to the handrails on both sides of the hall. "Cather," he grinned. "I have officially gotten you up to my room." Who knew it was at the end of a labyrinth? He opened the door behind him, then took both her hands, pulling her up and in. The room was small, with narrow dormer windows pushing out of it on 2 sides. There was no overhead light, so Levi turned on a lamp next to the queen-sized bed. It really was just a room with a bed, and a shiny turquoise love seat that was at least 50 years old. She looked up and around. "We're at the very top of the house, aren't we?"
"Servants' quarters," he said. "I was the only one willing to climb all these stairs."
"How'd you get this couch up here?"
"Talked Tommy into helping me. It was terrible. I don't know how anyone ever got this mattress up around all those corners. It's been here since the beginning of time."
Kath shifted nervously, and the floor creaked beneath her. Levi's bed was unmade, an old-looking quilt thrown over it, the pillows in disarray. He straightened the quilt and picked a pillow up off the floor. The room felt closer to the outdoors than to the rest of the house, exposed. Kath could hear wind whistling in the window frames. "I'll bet it gets cold up here."
"And hot in the summer," he said. "Are you thirsty? I could make tea. I should have asked while we were still downstairs."
"I'm fine," she said. Where Levi was standing, his hair brushed against the ceiling.
"Do you mind if I change? I helped water the horses before I left. Got kind of muddy."
Kath tried to smile. "Sure, go ahead." There were drawers built into a wall. Levi knelt over one, then ducked out of the room. The doorway was at least an inch too short for him, and Kath sat down carefully on the love seat. The fabric was cool beneath her. She ran her palm along it, some kind of slick cotton with nubby swirls and flowers. This room was worse than she thought. Dark, remote, practically in the trees, practically enchanted. A calculus test would feel intimate in here. She took off her coat and set it on his bed, then tugged off her soggy boots and pulled her legs up onto the love seat. If she held her breath, she could hear Bon Iver quietly blaring at least 2 floors below. Levi was back before Kath was ready for him, which was bound to happen. He looked like he'd washed his face, and he was wearing jeans and a baby blue flannel shirt. It was a nice color on him. It made his face tan and his hair yellow and his mouth pink. He sat down on the couch next to her. She knew he would. There was no room in this room for personal space. He picked Kath's hand up off the couch and held it loosely in both of his, looking down at it, then running his fingertips along the back, up and down her fingers. She took a deep breath. "How did you end up living here?"
"I worked with Tommy at Starbucks. One of his old roommates graduated and moved out. I was living in a house with 3 deadbeats, and I didn't mind the stairs. Tommy's dad bought this house as a real estate investment. He's lived here since he was a sophomore."
"What is he now?"
law student.
Kath nodded. The more that Levi touched her hand, the more that it tickled. She stretched out her fingers and took a soft breath.
Feel nice?
He asked, looking up at her with his eyes without lifting his head. She nodded again. If he kept touching her, she wouldn't be able to do even that. She'd have to blink once for yes, twice for no.
So, what happened this weekend?
He asked.
How is everybody?
Kath shook her head. Crazy. Fine. I think Ren and I are okay again. I think we made up. His lips twitched up on one side.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's great.
You could tell that he really thought so.
Yeah, Kath said. It is. I feel...
Levi brought one leg up between them and bumped her thigh with his knee. She practically jumped back over the arm of the couch. He made a frustrated noise that was half laugh, half sigh, and wrinkled his nose.
Are you really that nervous?
I guess so, she said. I'm sorry.
Do you know why? I mean, what's making you nervous? I meant what I said earlier about the table and what's on and off of it.
There is no table in here, Kath said. There's just a bed.
He pulled her hand into his chest.
Is that what you're scared of?
I don't know what I'm scared of.
That was a lie, a giant one. She was scared that he'd start touching her and then that they wouldn't stop. She was scared that she wasn't ready to be that person yet, the person who doesn't stop.
I'm sorry, she said.
Levi looked down at their hands, and he looked so disappointed and confused. And it was such a piss-poor way to treat him, dishonestly, distantly, after he'd put himself out there for her again and again.
This weekend, Kath said, and she tried to scoot closer. She knelt on the couch cushion next to him. Thank you.
Levi smiled again and lifted his eyes, just his eyes, up to her.
I don't think I can tell you how much it meant to me, she said. That you were there at the hospital. That you came.
He squeezed her hand. Kath pressed on.
I don't think I can tell you how much you mean to me, she said. Levi.
He lifted his whole face. His eyes were hopeful now, wary. Come here, he said, tugging on her hand.
I'm not sure I know how.
He clenched his jaw.
I have an idea.
I can't read you fan fiction, she said, teasing. I don't have my computer.
Don't you have your phone?
She tilted her head.
Was that really your idea? Fan fiction?
Yeah, he said, rubbing the palm of her hand. It always relaxes you.
I thought you'd been asking me to read to you because you liked the story.
I do like the story. And I like the way it relaxes you. You never finished reading me the rabbit one, you know. And you've never read me anything from Carry On.
Kath looked over at her coat. Her phone was in her pocket.
I feel like I'm failing you, she said. I was supposed to come over here and do stuff with you, not read lame fan fiction.
Levi bit his lip and stifled a laugh.
Do stuff? Is that the street name for it? Come on, Kath, I want to know what happens. They just killed the rabbit, and Simon had finally figured out that Baz was a vampire.
Are you sure about this?
Levi smiled, still looking overly cautious, and nodded. Kath leaned off the couch and found her phone. She wasn't used to Googling her own stories, but when she typed in Magic Kath and the fifth hair, her story came right up. While she looked for their place, Levi gently put his hands on her waist and pulled her back against him.
Okay?
He asked. She nodded.
Have I read this part? Simon didn't know what to say, how to respond to this, all this bloody information?
Yeah, I think so.
Did we get to the part where the rabbit caught fire?
What? No.
Okay, Kath said. I think I've got it. She leaned back against Levi's chest and felt his chin in her hair. This is fine, she told herself. I've been just here before. She propped her glasses in her hair and cleared her throat. Simon didn't know what to say, how to respond to this, all this bloody information. He picked up the sword and wiped it clean on his cloak. You all right? Baz licked his bloody lips like they were dry, Simon thought, and nodded his head. Good, Simon said, and realized that he meant it. Then a plume of flame shot up behind Baz, throwing his face into shadow. He whipped around and backed away from the rabbit. Its paw was well and truly on fire now, and the flames were already crawling up the beast's chest. My wand, Baz said, looking around him on the floor. Quick, cast an extinguishing spell, Snow. I don't know any, Simon said. Baz reached for Simon's wand hand and wrapped his own bloody fingers around Simon's. Make a wish, he shouted, flicking the wand in a half circle. The fire sputtered out, and the nursery fell dark. Baz let go of Simon's hand and started hunting around on the floor for his wand. Simon stepped closer to the gruesome corpse. Now what? He asked it. As if in answer, the rabbit began to shimmer, then fade, and then it was gone, leaving nothing behind but the smell of pennies and burnt hair. And something else. Baz conjured one of his blue balls of light. Ah, he said, picking up his wand. Filthy bugger was lying on it. Look, Simon said, pointing to another shadow on the floor. I think it's a key. He stooped to pick it up, an old-fashioned key with fanged white rabbit's teeth on its blade. Baz stepped closer to look. He was dripping with blood. The smell of gore was overwhelming. Do you think this is what I was meant to find? Simon asked. Well, Baz said thoughtfully, keys do seem more useful than giant, murderous rabbits. How many more of these do you have to fight? 5, but I can't do it alone. This one would have murdered me if... We have to clean up this mess, Baz said, looking down at the stains on the thick, piled rug. We'll have to tell the mage when he comes back, Simon said. There's too much damage here to handle ourselves. Baz was silent. Come on, Simon said. We can at least get ourselves cleaned up now. The boys' showers were as empty as the rest of the school. They chose stalls at opposite ends. What's wrong? Levi asked. Kath had stopped reading. I feel weird reading this mushy gay stuff out loud. Your roommates are here. Is one of them gay? I don't think I can read this with actual gay people in the house. Levi giggled. Micah? Trust me, it's okay. He watches straight stuff in front of me all the time. He's obsessed with Titanic. That's different. Kath, it's okay. Nobody can hear you. Wait, is this really a shower scene? Like, a shower scene? No, Kath said. Jeez. Levi moved his arms around her waist until he was holding her properly. Then he pushed his mouth into her hair. Read to me, sweetheart. Simon finished first and put on fresh jeans. When he looked back at Baz's stall, the water was still running pink at the other boy's ankles. Vampire, Simon thought, allowing himself to think the word for the first time, watching the water run. It should have filled him with hate and revulsion. The thought of Baz usually filled him with those things. But all Simon could feel right now was relief. Baz had helped him find the rabbit, helped him fight it, had kept both of them alive. Simon was relieved and grateful. He shoved his singed and stained clothes into the trash, then went back to their room. It was a long time before Baz joined him. When he did, he looked better than Simon had seen him look all year. Baz's cheeks and lips were flushed dark pink, and his gray eyes had come out of their shadows. Hungry? Simon asked.
Baz started laughing. The sun hadn't quite broken the horizon yet, and no one was about in the kitchens. Simon found bread and cheese and apples and tossed them onto a platter. It seemed strange to sit alone in the empty dining hall, so he and Baz sat on the kitchen flagstones instead, leaning back against a wall of cabinets. "Let's get this over with," Baz said, biting into a green apple, obviously trying to seem casual. "Are you going to tell the mage about me?" "He already thinks you're a nasty git," Simon said. "Yes," Baz said quietly, "but this is worse, and you know it. You know what he'll have to do." "Turn Baz over to the coven. It would mean certain imprisonment, perhaps death." Simon had been trying for 6 years to get Baz expelled, but he'd never wanted to see him staked. Still, Baz was a vampire. A vampire, damn it, a monster, and he was already Simon's enemy.
"A monster," Levi repeated.
He raised one hand to unclip Kath's hair. Her glasses were stuck there and fell sideways onto her arm. Levi picked them up and tossed them onto his bed.
"Your hair's still wet," he said, shaking it out with one hand.
Simon looked at Baz and tried again to summon the proper amount of horror. All he could manage was some weary dismay. "When did it happen?" he asked. "I already told you," Baz said. "We've just left the scene of the crime." "You were bitten in the nursery, as a child? Why didn't anyone notice?" "My mother was dead. My father swooped in and swept me back to the estate. I think he might have suspected. We've never talked about it." "Didn't he notice when you started drinking people's blood?" "I don't," Baz snapped imperiously. "And besides, the thirst doesn't manifest itself right away. It comes on during adolescence."
"Like acne?"
"Speak for yourself, Snow." "When did it come on for you?" "This summer," Baz said, looking down. "And you haven't?"
"No."
"Why not?" Baz turned on him. "Are you kidding me? Vampires murdered my mother, and if I'm found out, I'll lose everything. My wand, my family, possibly my life. I am a magician. I'm not..." He gestured toward his throat and his face. "This..." Simon wondered if he and Baz had ever been so close, had ever allowed each other to sit this close in all their years of living together. Baz's shoulder was nearly touching his own, and Simon could see every tiny bump and shadow on Baz's admittedly very clear skin. Every line of his lips, every flare of blue in his gray eyes.
"How are you staying alive?" Simon asked.
"I manage, thanks."
"Not well," Simon said. "You look like hell."
Baz smirked. "Again, thank you, Snow. You're a comfort."
"I don't mean now," Simon said. "You look great now."
Baz raised one eyebrow and lowered the other. "But lately," Simon pressed on, "you just seem like you're fading away. Have you been drinking anything?"
"I do what I can," Baz said, dropping his apple core onto the plate. "You don't want to know the details."
"I do," Simon argued. "Look, as your roommate, I have a vested interest in you not wandering around in a bloodlust." Levi's hand was still in Kath's hair. She felt him lift it up, felt his mouth on the back of her neck. His other arm pulled her tight against him. Kath concentrated on her phone. It had been so long since she'd written this story, she couldn't quite remember how it ended.
"I'd never bite you," Baz said, locking onto Simon's eyes.
"That's good," Simon said. "I'm glad you still plan to kill me the old-fashioned way, but you have to admit that this is hard on you."
"Of course it's hard on me." He threw a hand in the air in what Simon recognized as a very Baz-like gesture. "I've got the thirst of the ancients, and I'm surrounded by useless bags of blood all day."
"And all night," Simon said softly. Baz shook his head and looked away again.
I said I'd never hurt you, he muttered.
Then let me help.
Simon moved just an inch so their shoulders were touching. Even through his T-shirt and through Baz's cotton button-down, he could feel that Baz wasn't freezing anymore. He was warm. He seemed healthy again.
Why do you want to help?
Baz asked, turning back to Simon, who was close enough now to feel the soft heat of Baz's breath on his chin.
You'd keep a secret from your mentor to help your enemy?
You're not my enemy, Simon said. You're just a really bad roommate.
Levi laughed, and Kath felt it on her neck.
Baz laughed, and Simon felt it on his eyelashes.
You hate me, Baz argued. You've hated me from the moment we met.
I don't hate this, Simon said. What you're doing, denying your most powerful urges just to protect other people, it's more heroic than anything I've ever done.
They're not my most powerful urges, Baz said under his breath.
Do you know, Simon said, that half the time we're together, you're talking to yourself?
Ah, Snow, I didn't think you noticed.
I notice, Simon said, feeling 6 years of irritation and anger and 12 hours of exhaustion coming to a dizzy peak between his ears.
He shook his head, and he must have leaned forward because it was enough to bump his nose and chin against Baz's.
Let me help you, Simon said.
Baz held his head perfectly still. Then he nodded, gently thudding his forehead against Simon's.
I notice, Simon said, letting his mouth drift forward.
He thought of everything that had passed over the other boy's lips, blood and bile and curses. But Baz's mouth was soft now, and he tasted of apples. And Simon didn't care for the moment that he was changing everything.
Kath closed her eyes and felt Levi's chin track the back of her collar.
Keep reading, he whispered.
I can't, she said. It's over.
It's over?
He pulled his face away.
But what happens? Do they fight the other rabbits now? Are they together? Does Simon break up with Agatha?
That's up to you. It doesn't say.
But you could say. You wrote it.
I wrote it 2 years ago, Kath said. I don't know what I was thinking then, especially about that last paragraph. It's pretty weak.
I liked the whole thing, Levi said. I liked the thirst of the ancients.
Yeah, that was an okay line.
Read something else, he whispered, kissing the skin below her ear.
Kath took a deep breath.
What? Anything. More fan fiction, the soybean report. You're like a tiger who loves Brahms. As long as you're reading, you let me touch you.
He was right. As long as she was reading, it was almost like he was touching someone else, which was kind of messed up now that she thought about it.
Kath let her phone drop to the floor. She slowly turned toward Levi, feeling her waist twist in his arms, looking up as far as his chin and shaking her head.
No, she said. No. I don't want to be distracted. I want to touch you back.
Levi's chest rose steeply just as she set both hands on his flannel shirt. His eyes were wide.
Okay.
Kath focused on her fingertips. Feeling the flannel, feeling it slide against the T-shirt he wore underneath, feeling Levi underneath that, the ridges of muscle and bone. His heart beat in the palm of Kath's hand, right there, like her fingers could close around it.
I really like you, Levi whispered.
She nodded and spread out her fingers.
I really like you, too.
Say it again, he said. She laughed. There should be a word for a laugh that ends as soon as it starts, a laugh that's more a syllable of surprise and acknowledgement than it is anything else. Kath laughed like that, then hung her head forward, pushing her hands into his chest. I really like you, Levi. She felt his hands on her waist and his mouth in her hair.
Keep saying it, he said.
Kath smiled. I like you, she said, touching her nose to his chin.
I would have shaved if I'd known I was going to see you tonight.
His chin moved when he talked. I like you like this, she said, letting it scrape her nose and her cheek. I like you. He lifted a hand to the back of her neck and held her there.
Kath.
She swallowed and set her lips on his chin. Levi. Right about then, Kath realized just how close she was to the edge of Levi's jaw and remembered what she'd promised herself to do there. She closed her eyes and kissed him below his chin, behind his jaw, where he was soft and almost chubby, like a baby. He arched his neck, and it was even better than she'd hoped. I like you, she said. So much. I like you here. Kath brought her hands up to his neck. God, he was warm. Skin so warm and thick, a heavier ply than her own. She slid her fingers into his hair, cradling the back of his head. His hands mimicked hers, pulling her face up to his.
Kath, if I kiss you now, are you going to leap away from me?
No.
Are you going to panic?
She shook her head. Probably no. He bit the side of his bottom lip and smiled. His bowed lips didn't quite reach the corners.
I like you,
she whispered. He pulled her forward. Right. There was this. Kissing Levi. So much better when she was awake and her mouth wasn't muddy from reading out loud all night. She nodded and kissed him back. When Baz and Simon kissed, Kath always made a big deal out of the moment when one of them opened his mouth. But when you're actually kissing someone, it's hard to keep your mouth closed. Kath's mouth was open before Levi even got there. It was open now. Levi's mouth was open, too, and he kept pulling back a little, like he was going to say something. Then his chin would jut forward again, back into hers. God, his chin. She wanted to make an honest woman of his chin. She wanted to lock it down. The next time Levi pulled back, Kath went back to kissing his chin, pressing her face up under his jaw. I just like you so much here.
I just like you so much, he said, his head falling back against the couch. Even more than that, you know.
And here, she said, pushing her nose up against his ear. Levi's earlobes were attached to his head, which made Kath think of Punnett squares and Mendel, and made her try to pull his earlobe away with her teeth. You're really good here, she said. He brought his shoulders up like it tickled.
Come here. Come here, he said, pulling at her waist.
She was sitting just beside him, and he seemed to want her in his lap. I'm heavy, she said.
Good.
Kath always knew that she'd make a spectacle of herself if she ever got Levi alone, and that's just what she was doing. She was mauling his ear. She wanted to feel it on every part of her face. It was okay. She could imagine him telling Reagan or one of his 18 roommates tomorrow. She wouldn't stop licking my ear. I think she might have an ear fetish. And you don't even want to know what she did to my chin. Levi was still holding her waist too tight, like he was getting ready for a figure skating lift.
Kath, he said and swallowed.
The knot in his throat dipped, and she tried to catch it with her mouth. Here, too, she said. Her voice sounded pained. He was too lovely, too good, too much. So much here. Really, your whole head. I like your whole head. Levi laughed, and she tried to kiss everything that moved. His throat, his lips, his cheeks, the corner of his eyes. Baz would never kiss Simon this chaotically. Simon would never crush his nose against Baz's widow's peak the way Kath was about to. She gave in to Levi's hands and climbed onto his lap, her knees on either side of his hips. He craned his neck to gaze up at her, and Kath held his face by his temples. "Here, here, here," she said, kissing his forehead, letting herself touch his feather-light hair. "Oh, God, Levi, you drive me crazy here." She smoothed his hair back with her hands and her face, and she kissed the top of his head the way he always kissed her, the only kisses she'd allowed for so many weeks. Levi's hair didn't smell like shampoo or freshly mown clover. It smelled like coffee, mostly, and like Kath's pillow the week after he spent the night. Her mouth settled on his hairline, where his hair was the lightest and finest. Her own hair was